Good evening. Welcome to the October Board of Education meeting. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Again, thank you for joining us this evening. Again, apologies for our late arrival. At this time, in lieu of my remarks, President's remarks, I'm going to turn the mic over to Dr. Cantara to make a statement.
I wasn't expecting to go so quickly. Just very quickly, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It's a cause that's very, very near and dear to my heart. My wife was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2017. Thank God she's okay. 8 rounds of chemo and multiple surgeries, and she's doing really well. But 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their life. So if you put that in perspective, if this auditorium is a little more full, one person in every single row of this auditorium or more will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime. The reason why my wife is still here is for early detection. So please take the time, go to the doctor, get checked. Even if you haven't been checked recently and you feel something, go get it checked again. So I wish all you guys good health. So thank you.
At this time, we'll take any comments on the agenda items only. No agenda items. At this time, we're going to have a presentation from the curriculum department by Dr. Garcia and Mr. Spinato.
Okay, good evening, buenas noches, and happy Hispanic Heritage Month. And on behalf of the curriculum office and the superintendent's office and the Board of Education, I would like to thank everyone for coming out today. I'm Dr. Garcia Matthews, and I'm the curriculum director. And I am joined with my counterpart, Mrs. Spinato, who's the director of curriculum and technology. We would just like to provide you with some curriculum overviews and updates for the 2022-2023 school year. All right.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to start by sharing our 2021-2022 state assessment data for ELA and math. And please note that all the decisions that the curriculum department makes are rooted in data and the trends that we see in that data. So if you take a look up at the top, only half of our students in grades 3 through 6 took the 2021-2022 assessment exams in ELA and math. What this data shows is that the scores from 21-22 are very consistent with what we saw prior to the 2 years of the pandemic. And there's two areas we'd like to focus on. The first is our sixth grade. Our sixth grade ELA scores, 71% of our students were proficient, scoring level 3 or 4. And of those students, nearly 50% of those, 45%, scored a level 4, which is mastery level. Now, we're going to take the good with the bad, so we also have an area of focus. Our fifth grade scores are an area that we are going to focus on, and much of the curriculum areas that we're going to discuss today are going to address some of those issues in fifth grade, so we'll circle back to those conversations in a little bit.
All right, for the 2021-2022 fourth grade science assessment results, we had a total of 93% of our students scoring a level 3 or 4. This year, in June 2023, there will be no fourth grade science assessment because of the state is no longer administering it. So the next time there is going to be an assessment for science will be in fifth grade in 2024. So can I get an applause for 93%? That was getting ahead of myself. All right. So 2021-2022 NICESLAT assessment results actually shows 20% of our English language learners were exited from our E&L program. And 7 of them were actually exited due to their ELA scores. So that's around 75 students exited commanding. Thank you. They got the cue.
So our state assessment data shows one data point for our scholars. However, our teachers take several forms of local assessments to get a broader picture of what our scholars are actually doing in the classroom. And one of those forms of local assessments is something called our running records. And what our running records are is a test that gauges the independent reading level of our scholars. And the data that you see up on the screen represents the data from September of last year, 2021 to 22, to June. And in that data, 96% of our students increased at least one reading level. And nearly 72% of our scholars improved three reading levels. And why is that important? Three reading levels in most cases indicate an entire grade level of improvement in reading levels. So that adds a level of understanding of what's happening in their classrooms that the state assessments might not necessarily provide for us.
So our superintendent, Mr. Rosner, actually has required and has sat down with all of our building administrators to solidify a building-specific action plan based on the data that needs to be included in our Almont Continuous Improvement Plan. And this improvement plan is actually based on SMART goals, and those are the specific, measurable, actionable, realistic, and time-bound goals that all of our buildings have just created. Our instructional focus this year is, of course, increasing our reading stamina, and, of course, going along with our interactive read-alouds, which build background knowledge, and, of course, build robust vocabulary. We're also focusing on small group math, and one of our pillars that is going to help us with that is our instructional coaches. They've been amazing. One of the other things we're doing is we revamped the RTI plan, the response to intervention, and we actually are targeting our level ones and two students and ensuring that they're part of the targeted morning tutorial program, along with our after-school enrichment programs, which will be rolling out shortly. In our grades K to 2, we have implemented Fontes and Pinnell guided rating levels, libraries district-wide. There's also the Foundations program, our Wilson's Foundation program, which allows us to really get to our early scholars in order to increase their phonological and phonemic awareness programs. We just started this year our FMP reading and writing mini lessons. We're, of course, continuing with our interactive read-alouds, which build the vocabulary and prior knowledge. We've introduced the IXL digital math platforms in K-2 to build on the skills that students have need to develop during the pandemic. And, of course, we've expanded our inclusive community program, which aligns to our district DEI policy. And last but not least, we've redesigned and aligned all of our science project-based learning units to ensure that we are aligned with the New York State science learning standards. We also are focusing, of course, through research-based programs, we are focusing on early literacy development, you know, to address the five pillars of early literacy, and that's through the Wilson Foundation program, the IRAs, the reading and writing mini lessons, and, of course, the guided reading libraries that allow us to individualize instruction driven by their students' reading levels. And let me just make sure I got everything here. Okay. So we all know that vocabulary is important. It's really grounded in research. And, of course, the research shows that the reading comprehension and vocabulary knowledge is strong and, of course, necessary. So what we've done is we've targeted our professional development plan with our new teachers by having a book study. And we're all reading, bringing words to life, which allows our teachers to understand the difference between tier one, tier two, and tier three words. And so that's just been our real main focus, and they all received the book at our new teacher orientation, and it's been a good success thus far in terms of getting that background knowledge and developing that vocabulary that they need.
So in examining our curriculums for grades 3 through 6, you may notice some of the same programs that Dr. Garcia had mentioned for our pre-K through 2 programs, and that's purposeful. There's a continuity of programs across the grade levels for our students as they progress from pre-K and kindergarten all the way through 6th grade. So in our 3 through 6 curriculums, we're looking at implementing the FMP guided reading libraries district-wide. Every classroom has a set of guided, every building has a guided reading library that teachers use to work on reading skills with our students. We've introduced the IXL digital math platform in order to address the math gaps that might be present due to the pandemic and work on building foundational skills for math. We expanded our inclusive community read program. We expanded our after-school enrichment opportunities to include coding, Lego robotics, science research, Model United Nations. We've expanded our small group balanced math approach, which we'll talk more about shortly. We've redesigned and aligned all science project-based learning units, PBLs, to the new New York State Science Learning Standards that Dr. Garcia had mentioned previously. And we've implemented an iPad refresh program for grades 5 and 6. We've replaced 1,000 iPads of old iPads that no longer were functional for our students in 5th and 6th grade to the newest 9th generation iPads. Now, going back to our conversation previously about data and looking at the data from the assessment exams, we've noticed that there's a gap in math instruction. And this is a gap that's it's present across all of New York State in fifth grade. So one of the things that we've used is we've built a balanced math program mirroring our balanced literacy program that we use in ELA instruction. To support this, we provided a dedicated professional development program using a book study similar to our approach to vocabulary, using the text Making Sense of Math for Teaching Small Group Math. Now, our focus is providing individualized small group math instruction based on the needs of each student. So we're in those groups, you'll see reteaching of content, targeting specific curriculum areas for those students in those small groups, reinforcing foundational skills that we've also mentioned with IXL, guided practice for our students, and most importantly for our students, giving immediate feedback to our students. So think teaching a group of 4 or 5 students versus teaching a class of 25 students that same concept. So they're getting individualized instruction. In addition, Dr. Garcia had mentioned this is the last year that we are implementing the fourth grade. Last year was the last year we're implementing the fourth grade science assessment. That next year it's moving to fifth grade. So we had a revamping of our science curriculum. So all of our PBLs in grades K through 6 have been realigned to the new New York State Science Learning Standards. And they are based on project-based learning units, which is a hands-on model. And in this hands-on model, students are going to learn science content material. They're going to learn engineering standards. There's cross-curricular content. They're going to be having information from different content areas addressed, as well as applications to the real world. And all of this is built on a platform of Reading A to Z, which is part of Science A to Z, which is part of Learning A to Z, which is a literacy-based application, again, consistent with our goal of early literacy development and continuing literacy instruction throughout all 6 years of elementary school.
So, of course, we base all our instructional decisions on the data. And as you'll notice, your students will probably, your own children will probably be getting running records, NWA, Gold Math chapter tests, benchmark assessments, anecdotals, and of course, all our administrative staff has grade level meetings to ensure that everyone's aware of what's happening and what the goal is, and that's what we do here in Elmont.
With a big shout out to our building principals and our building assistant principals who've really helped focus our instructional goals in each of our buildings, I'd also like to add to that list our instructional coaches. Our instructional coaches have been in existence for the last 2 years, and they have really helped us drive our initiatives in each of our buildings, and they provide targeted professional development that really adhere to all of our initiatives curriculum-wise that we are addressing throughout the district. So guided reading libraries, running records, small group ELA and math instruction, AIS, our leveled literacy intervention program, technology integration, model lessons for our teachers to be able to see how lessons should be carried out, and as well as supporting our new staff. This group of 6 phenomenal educators also helps track our instructional data. So going back to the original conversation about how we use data to drive our curriculum decisions is really geared and designed with the help of our instructional coaches, and our coaches are able to actually promote this by creating a district coaches corner, which is a newsletter to help spread that idea across the district and to all of our staff. We'd like to thank everybody for having us tonight, and we look forward to a fantastic rest of the school year.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Oh, we have a question. So there is a pillar associated with My Brother's Keeper that is early literacy development, which, because we're an elementary school district, this fits in very well. So our focus is to really to help kids learn and learn how to read to be able to be to achieve well in our district.
So my question, though, is this directly in response to the initiative that the district has taken?
I understand. Sure.
Done because of the program or part in part with the program.
So all of our decisions that we make based on curriculum are based on the data from assessment exams and our local assessments in order to improve success of our students are not necessarily based on anything other than that. And we want, being an elementary school district, our focus is on literacy. Being a former high school teacher, I know the importance of a strong literacy foundation for high school success. So that is what our drive is. It's not the drive from something else other than really looking for opportunities to build curriculum, to make our students strong and academically successful and prepared for high school. One of the federal standards of My Brother's Keeper is increasing early literacy development, which just happens to be consistent with that, but not because of that. They're instructional coaches. They actually, based on their areas of expertise, are assigned to different initiatives that we have in the district. Some focus on literacy. Some focus on math instruction. You want to talk a little bit about the grant?
No, it's actually through the ESSER grant that we received from the state through the pandemic. So it's a three-year grant that we must use. And so we decided to allocate some of those funds to actually finally get us instructional coaches to assist with our professional development program. Yeah, I left the other source, but it's around, like we said, it's half. So normally we have 3,500 students, like total, right, for the whole district. That's kindergarten included. So when we do our testing, it's around 1,800 students. So it was, and because of the opt-outs and along with the pandemic, there was pretty much half of that that actually took the exam. Right, so that's why we were saying, we started the presentation with saying this part, saying that because it's only half, you know, you really can't look at it for face value. And, you know, like we can see that number, but ultimately it's, you know, we would love, of course, all our students to take the assessment so we can actually get a clearer picture of what it actually is.
Can I just add one thing to that? I'm sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Just to go back to one of our last slides, looking at local assessments, we know that the value of that state assessment data gives us one lens to view our students, which is not a full picture of what our students are capable of doing, hence why we brought in the running record data. Mm-hmm. But this is a list, and not an exhaustive list, but a list of some of the more high value pieces of data that we look at a continual basis. Each teacher has a data grid with hundreds of pieces of data connected to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's from the classroom teacher.
Yeah.
So it's small group instruction.
It's in the mirror.
One teacher.
Yeah, it's just one teacher. So that the whole focus of math this year is to do small group math. So all our teachers are doing small group math with our students. And we do have a pull-out model that's for our AIS program, which is the Academic Intervention Services, which is different from the small group initiative that we're rolling out this year.
And it's similar to the workshop model that teachers use routinely. Right. Thank you.
Yes. So they're specific, measurable, actionable, realistic, and time-bound. So an example would be by June of 2023, we will see 59% of our students in fourth grade score level 3 or 4 on the math assessment. That's kind of a specific, it's measurable, it's actionable, it's realistic, and it's time-bound.
And each of those goals are supported by specific strategies for buildings and teachers to achieve those goals.
Correct. Correct.
This is the second year of the program, so 2 years ago the posting was put out through the faculty for people to apply.
And we wanted to make sure it was in-house. We wanted to, of course, to have our own teachers kind of be, yes, it's in-house.
Mm-hmm.
No. So we actually used this federal grant money to be able to actually backfill their position. So what we did is we took six teachers from the classroom who were master teachers, brought them out of the classroom, and are now the professional developers for the district. And so, of course, we then needed to hire six additional teachers to replace those teachers that are now the coaches.
It's the normal teacher pay scale. Just a change of position.
Yeah. You're welcome. All right. Should I give it to you back, or do you want me to give it to Ms. Warfield? Mr. Rosner.
So I'm just going to introduce Mrs. Warfield, who has a quick presentation, but an important one. Mrs. Warfield.
Thank you, and good evening to everyone. I'm very excited this evening to be able to share with everyone in attendance that the Alden Terrace School was awarded the National PTA School of Excellence Award. Thank you. I just want to be able to share that 10 schools on Long Island received this special designation, and we were one of them. We are also only one of 17 in the state of New York and one of 242 in the entire United States to receive this. And thank you. It couldn't be done alone. This is a type of award and achievement, a school of excellence, that is with a partnership with our parents and our community. So I would like to ask our PTA presidents, Ms. Coombs, as well as Ms. Passad Barrett. I'd also like to ask our school nurse to come up at this time, because this didn't happen alone. And Ms. Coombs, yes. The PTA of Alden Terrace, if you are here, please come forward. Thank you. And it's important. Sure, you could hold it too. Thank you. Yes. I'd like that. I'd like to have Ms. Coombs come forward, if you can. Ms. Passad Barrett, can you just share with everyone in attendance what went into this? This isn't something that you just get. A lot of work went into this. And if you could speak about the platform that we presented on, and to think that this came out of a pandemic, that this award was awarded through a pandemic, is really, really commendable. Ms. Coombs and Ms. Passad Barrett.
I'm going to let her do most of the talking.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Mrs. Coombs. I'm the current Alden PTA president for the year 2022-2023. To my left, I would like to introduce Ms. Passad Barrett, who is our president for last year, Mr. Benins, who was our treasurer for last year, Nurse Corallo, who worked with us to bring the platform to our students. She worked with us to bring it to our students on a kids level. Also, I want to acknowledge our administration, Ms. Warfield, our principal, Ms. Beldo, who is here with us. Also, we do have two other staff members that are not here with us tonight, Mr. Pettis, who is our gym teacher, and also Ms. Farrell, who is our librarian. So I just want to share a little notes with you that I wrote. Ms. Warfield put me on the spot. She knows I'm a nervous wreck. I blank all the time. So bear with me. The Alden Terrace PTA is proud to be awarded this distinguished recognition of New York State PTA School of Excellence. This award celebrates and supports the partnerships between PTA, schools, community, and enrich the educational well-being of all of our scholars. This year, our focal platform was health and safety, with emphasis on health during an unprecedented year. PTA would like to thank and recognize each and every one that's here. Nurse Corallo kicked off for us the platform with the children. It was virtual. We were not able to do in-school presentations, so that was a little difficult for us, but we worked with the administration where Nurse Corallo, we included that in our PARP, Pick a Reading Partner, where she did a presentation in school to kick off PARP, and she spoke about all the different levels of health to the children, exercising, eating, everything. She also did a presentation, too, at our PTA meeting. Ms. Warfield and ourselves, we also worked with Mr. Pettis, who did at our principal's community Zoom. He spoke to our parents about well-being and mindfulness. And with everything that was going on, it was good to also reach our parents' platform, not just the children, but also our parents, because everybody was going through the pandemic. So I would just like to take this time to thank everybody that participated and helped us to achieve the School of Excellence for 2021 to 2023. It's for 3 years, yes.
Thank you again to our PTA. We appreciate you. We appreciate all that you do on behalf of our scholars and our treasures here at Alden Terrace. Thank you so much, and have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, and congratulations to the Alden Terrace PTA again on behalf of the entire board. Is there any correspondence? No correspondence. At this time, we'll have the report of our school attorney. Oh, I'm sorry. So, Ms. Delahanty actually let the record reflect that all board members are present, with the exception of Mr. Mafia. And can I have a motion to approve tonight's agenda? Move Ms. Capers, second Ms. Garlick. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries. At this time, I'll ask for approval of the minutes of the September 13th meeting. Can I have a motion, please? Move Dr. Kantara, second Ms. Garlick. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries. Okay, so at this point, we'll have the report of our school attorney.
Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone. I just would like to introduce myself. My name is Candace Gomez. I'm an attorney for the school district. I've been representing the district along with my law firm, Bond Shenigan King, since July of this year. I know that many of you are familiar with Colum Nugent, who is the former attorney for the school district, who served faithfully here for about 39 years, I believe. So it's wonderful to have a chance to meet all of you and to see such a great turnout. The previous meetings have been in the Elmont Road building, so this is my first time at a meeting in a school building where the fun and the hard work of learning actually happens. So it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for welcoming me to your district. In terms of the attorney report, there are a couple of resolution items that I would like to put forth to the board at this point in time. Immediately before the start of this board meeting, the audit committee of the school district met, in which the auditor's report, the independent auditor's report, was reviewed, and the audit committee ultimately did recommend to the Board of Education that the independent auditor's report be accepted. At this point in time, I will ask for a motion from the board to actually accept the independent auditor's report, financial statements, supplementary information, management's discussion and analysis, and the related reports for the year ending June 30th, 2022. Do I have a motion?
Ms. Capers, Dr. Battle-Riquette, any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries.
Thank you. the second resolution at this time is I will request a motion for the Board of Education to retain the firm of Naraki Smith LLP as the auditors for fiscal year ending June 30th, 2023. Do I have a motion?
You have a motion, please. Move Ms. Early Davis. Second, Dr. Cantara. Any discussion? All in favor? Any abstentions? So we have five yes and one abstention.
And Ms. Stella Hunter, you have the abstention noted, correct? Okay, thank you. I believe that the other statement I will make will be before audience participation?
Correct.
Thank you. So that concludes my attorney's report at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we'll have the report of the superintendent.
Good evening. Nice to see everybody. Just want to say thank you to Mr. Spinato and Dr. Garcia. We started this year doing public presentations on lots of different topics, and we felt it was important to let the community know of the hard work that's going into planning and coming out of this pandemic and challenging our students and focus on learning. So I just want to congratulate both of you for your attention to details, taking questions. Those are great questions. And just kind of moving this forward, pushing the rock forward. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. As always, I want to say thank you to our veterans, our first responders, and our active military. If there's anybody here that is a first responder, active military, or a veteran, I say thank you to all of you for keeping us safe and for doing what you do for this wonderful community. Thank you very much. This is Board Appreciation Month, and I want to say a thank you to our 7 board members for the time that you put in. You volunteer for this, and we do a lot of hard work behind closed doors as well as out in the public. So I just want to say thank you to all of you. Appreciate all of your help and your support. Thank you very, very much. This is also Custodian Appreciation Month. I did not know that, and they play such an important part. Yeah. You talk about health and safety. Well, they're an integral part of that, keeping us safe these past few years. But if you look at these buildings, they're beautiful. And there are some very old buildings here, but they're pristine. They take a lot of time, and they take a lot of dedication, and take a lot of pride in what they do. And I need to get a better calendar that has all these appreciation months, because I don't have that. Please. But I just want them to know that I do appreciate them, our staff appreciates them, and a heartfelt thank you to all of our custodians who work very, very hard to help our children. So thank you. And my last point of information before we bring somebody up is that without giving a name and without giving a school, I do want to say that I was notified that the valedictorian at Sewanaka High School was a member, obviously, of our district. But that student came to us as an ENL student. And if that doesn't sum up the power of Elmont, then I don't know what would. That is absolutely what this district is about. And I don't want to let the cat out of the bag because that's not my role. But I do want to say congratulations to the teachers, to the community, to the staff, for taking a new student who came to us from the Philippines, making the family feel at home, and making them the valedictorian at Sewanaka High School. The community should be proud. The community should be proud. I am, and I wear that as a badge of honor, and you all should as well. Since it is Board Appreciation Month, I'm going to ask our principals just to come forward and present the board with what you have, please. Mrs. McLaughlin, are you? I'm sorry, I didn't see the whole audience.
You do.
So I'll just introduce Debbie Buchanan. She's the president of the Elmont Elementary Teachers Association.
Good evening, everyone. As I said, my name is Debbie Buchanan. I'm president of the Elmont Elementary Teachers Association. I'd like to introduce you to my executive board members, Rob Bambrick, Nancy McLaughlin, and Meredith Woolweber. We would like to thank each and every member of the Board of Education for their tireless efforts on behalf of the Elmont community and the schools. We appreciate you, and we would like to let you know that from each and every teacher, a donation has been made in your name to the Bruce Metzger Fund, which means that library books for each of the six schools will be purchased in your name as a thank you for your constant and unwavering commitment to our community. Thank you for all you do. Okay, and on with the business of the district. Seek a motion to approve professional leaves of absences, appointments, changes in status, and resignations noted on pages 1 through 8.
Have a motion to approve pages 1 through 8. Move Ms. Capers. Second, Ms. Early Davis. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries.
Seek a motion to approve civil service leaves of absences, appointments, changes in status, terminations, resignations, and retirements noted on pages 9 through 14.
Can I have a motion to approve pages 9 through 14, please? Move Dr. Kantar. Second, Ms. Early Davis. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries.
Seek a motion to receive the Committee on Special Education and Preschool Education on page 15.
Can I have a motion to receive page 15? Ms. Garlick? Ms. Early Davis? Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries.
Seek a motion to approve items 3 through 11 on pages 16 through 18 with one correction, as the convention is in Syracuse.
Have a motion to approve pages 16 through 18 as noted. Move Ms. Garlick. Second, Dr. Kantara. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries.
Items 1 through 3 are noted for the minutes on page 19.
Page 19 is so noted for the minutes.
I seek a motion to approve the schedule of disbursements and warrants on page 20.
Can I have a motion to approve page 20? Move Dr. Battle-Burkett. Second, Ms. Early Davis. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries.
Seek a motion to receive the Treasurer's Report on page 21.
Can I have a motion to receive the Treasurer's Report on page 21? Move Dr. Kantara. Second, Ms. Garlick. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries.
Seek a motion on page 22 to approve the business report, other approvals, and authorization items 4A and 4B.
Can I have a motion to approve page 22? Move Dr. Battle-Burkett. Second, Dr. Kantara. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries.
On page 23, items A through I are noted for the minutes, as well as the vandalism tallies for September 2022 on page 24.
Pages 23 and 24 are so noted for the minutes.
Mr. Jaime, that concludes my report. Thank you very much. Again, thank you to the board members for your unwavering support.
Thank you. At this time, and by the way, thank you to Ida for the donations in the names of all the board members to purchase much-needed books across the district libraries. Again, thank you. At this time, we have our business official that will address a question from our last board meeting regarding the banking depositories that the district uses.
Good evening. I would like to ask for Business Consultant Appreciation Month. There's so much appreciation going on here, I felt left out. Okay, so the response to the question was, the question last month was, why does the district deposit funds into Flushing Bank as opposed to a local bank, which is a very basic and good question. So I'm going to explain how the process works in general. The state of New York adopts laws to regulate schools and where we can put our funds. It needs to be in a commercial bank, and it needs to be collateralized, meaning every dollar that we deposit in the bank then digitally sets aside U.S. Treasury securities, New York State, and other state and local government securities to secure those deposits. So if that bank were to default in these uncertain times, we actually own those securities that we can go get and then hopefully cash them in for at least their face value. So that's the basics of it. And there's in Elmont itself, there's three banks that are within the physical geographic area. None of them are commercial banks who offer those services for a municipality, to make that simple. On the general banking of the district, we have our banking activities at TD Bank and also JP Morgan Chase, partly because they offer lots of branches for staff to be able to cash checks and so forth, and because they provide the best, lowest fees and returns. Flushing Bank is a place where we deposit funds digitally overnight, and we get about, presently it's almost 1% with overnight funds, which is a very high and competitive rate of return, better than you can find elsewhere for overnight money. We don't have the luxury of having, say, $1 million that we won't need in 3, 4, 5, 6 months. So we don't have any long-term investments. Those who follow the markets right now, you have an inverted yield curve. You can get 4% on a 2-year Treasury security, which is pretty good, but we can't really do that and go buy something and say we don't need the cash for 2 years. So more or less the best way to look at it is when money's deposited to our bank, it's TD Bank, JP Morgan Chase for all of our payroll for people to be able to cash their paychecks, and then to be able to maximize the interest income we receive to help out the taxpayers, we have funds at Flushing Bank in order to get that higher rate of return. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom. Well, we'll get to your question when it's, which we will. In just a couple of minutes, okay? You'll be the first one at the mic. So at this point, the attorney is going to make a comment, and then we will proceed with audience to visitors.
Thank you, Mr. Jaime. So I have two announcements that I'd like to make at this point in time. The first is with regard to audience participation, and the second is with regard to the maintenance of board executive session confidentiality. So with regard to audience participation, this is, of course, a board meeting of the Elmont Union Free School District. We are here to focus on the business of the elementary school district. As we can see from the presentation that was put forth earlier today by Mr. Spinato and Dr. Garcia Matthews, there is a lot of good and important work happening here, and we need to be fully focused on what's happening in this district in order to best serve the needs of our children in this district. So I say all that to be clear that if there are concerns, and I'm sure there are important concerns about what is happening in the Sewanaka Central High School District, that this is not the appropriate time or place for those concerns. This is a separate board with a separate superintendent, separate legal counsel. We are different entities, and we just want to be sure that we're focused tonight on the business of the Elmont School District so that anyone who comes to the microphone is mindful of that. And as always, I appreciate your cooperation and consideration in that regard. As I continue, the second portion that I'd like to make clear to everyone is that there are certain laws that govern executive sessions, and those laws are intended to protect the confidentiality of what the board discusses in executive session. It has been brought to our attention that a former board member may have made a public statement indicating that he or she intends to expose or reveal certain confidential information that he or she may have learned during executive session. And we just want to be sure that everyone understands that whether or not a person is currently sitting on the board, they still have the legal duty to maintain the confidentiality of what they learned as a board member in executive session. That's set forth in the New York State General Municipal Law. It's also set forth in the New York State Penal Law, which is a criminal law. And revealing confidential information that is learned in the course of someone's official duties can be a Class A misdemeanor. So we say that to make everyone fully aware before they speak that there are certain laws, rules, and regulations governing this, and we don't want to limit anyone's freedom of speech. If you have a First Amendment right to say something, we certainly welcome you to be able to do that. But there are also laws that make it so you cannot say anything you wish if you happen to be a current board member or former board member, and what you say may be in violation of the laws that I just talked about. So we just want to make sure everyone understands that. So we enter into this with open eyes, fully aware, and of course we appreciate your cooperation.
Thank you. At this time, Ms. Lewis, if you come to the mic. If please come to the mic.
Good evening. My name is Rochelle Lewis. It's R-A-C-H-E-L-L-E. I believe it was misspelled on the minutes before. I want to first address what was just spoken about regarding Flushing. I was under the idea that this was going to be a committee that was going to meet and address it. So if it was a committee report, would the discussion not have been right after that? That would have been my first question. So I guess the question is, was that a committee report, and would we be getting a copy of that report that was done to determine that Flushing Bank would be the best bank? I don't know who would be answering that.
I can answer that.
And I apologize. I did not hear your name.
Yes, Tom Galante.
Galante, okay.
I've been with the district since 1984, so I understand these things pretty well. There's no committee that I'm aware of. I was explaining how the district manages its finances, which we've done for a long, long time.
Okay, so there is no committee report. So would that be something that would be now
that
highlighted
would be
in the minutes?
That you would address with the board. The board does committees.
Okay.
Just the guy who manages
well,
the money.
Your response, will that be addressed in the minutes, and would we get the clear names of the banks that were identified as the three in the Elmont district?
Each year at the July reorganization meeting,
correct,
the board appoints who its depository banks are. And for a number of years, TD Bank for our operating accounts, JP Morgan Chase for payroll, and Flushing Commercial Bank for investments. It's on the website. Probably been the case for at least 10 years.
Okay. But my question last month was to make to ask for us to look into changing it. So when you're giving me the process and what's been in place, it doesn't sound like there was anything additionally done. So you're just, what you gave to me tonight was a report on how it is.
Correct.
Okay, so there was no additional research like I requested done. There was no committee formed. There was no research. It was just, let's get an answer, which you provided. I just want to make sure that's what.
So based on your original question, you asked why we were using Flushing Bank.
Correct.
And then you asked for a committee.
Correct.
So we went to Mr. Galante and asked him to explain to us the process and why we are using the banks that we're currently using today, and to consider looking at the banks that are within the confines of Elmont.
Correct. So, and I understand that. But I just also would like to explain and actually educate my neighbors that if that was a committee report, discussion would have been open right after.
If the banks within Elmont were viable.
No, I'm not talking about the banks. I'm talking about if his report was a committee report.
It's just a report.
Yes. So that's
from the
why
business
I
official.
Asked the question right after. So me being asked to come to the mic right now and to address that was not necessarily my misunderstanding. I thought it was a committee report like I requested, but it was not.
Well, there was, call it research done by a board member to look and see what banks are in the geographic region of Elmont.
And in July.
And the three banks that are in the district are not commercial banks that offer products that we can use by law.
In July. That was done in July.
No, it was just done after you asked your question.
Okay.
We did some follow-up.
Okay.
That's simple.
All right. Correct, but not a committee report. Thank you. So I would just like to say that, as most of you know, that I am a resident of Elmont. I am a past parent of Elmont Dutch Broadway Elementary School. I am a past PTA president of Dutch Broadway. I am a past president of Elmont Interschool, and I am also a past vice president of Sewanico Central Council PTSA. My name is Rochelle Lewis, and in terms of the community and our respect and our desires and our vision for this board is why I am coming to this microphone this evening. I first would like to thank Superintendent Mr. Rosner. Mr. Rosner, without question, in all those capacities, from the time I've stepped into any PTA role, you have always opened your doors and answered questions and have been very transparent when you can with parents. It is not a question of anything that I may bring up in terms of you as the person. It's in terms of your role and the policies and procedures of the board that we're trying to clarify. So please just take that into consideration. One of the questions that we've asked and tried to get better understanding is the policies and procedures of this district. Seeing I was brought up, and I will start, one of my first questions is the superintendent under a contract? When does his term expire, if he is?
So the superintendent does have a contract, and I will defer to him to tell you when it expires because I don't have it at the forefront of my memory.
So my first 2 years, I was under my first contract, and the contract was renewed for me for 5 years. So technically, this is year one of a new five-year contract.
And when you are the superintendent, I'm assuming there is an annual review and ratings are actually provided. Is that public knowledge of the ratings of a superintendent, and if so, where could we find that?
No. So the annual performance report of any superintendent is a part of his personnel file, and that would not be available to the general public.
So the district's annual review of the process of the superintendent would not be a public document that would be provided?
That's correct.
Okay. What is the criteria or written policy for the renewal of the superintendent's contract?
So there is no policy. It's
criteria.
The criteria would be based on his goals and his goals that he determines for himself and the goals that the board would give the superintendent.
So at some point there would be a determination of whether those have been met, which in line with his performance.
Correct.
Okay. In light of the community's outpouring towards the recent events in our community, Elmont Memorial has parents that have children in the high school and in the elementary school. We've talked about addressing calendars. We've talked about aligning our mission. We've talked about working together. But there is obviously a need to revisit or readdress the representatives that have been selected from this board to the elementary unit. There is a lack of a voice. There is a lack of transparency. And there is a question on what the plan or process is when there is a lack of trust that has been established that the community feels to now determine how we pull back our representatives from the high school level. This is not a question about the high school level. This is a question about our board representatives coming back to speak to us on the elementary level about what's going on in the high school, because that's their position as a representative, I believe. And in addition to that, if there is a lack of trust that the community feels, I would like to know what is the process to have those representatives pulled back. So I am not asking for a person, I'm asking for a process.
So each month at our Board of Education meetings, barring probably this one and the last one, a report is given by the high school delegates to the general public at our Board of Education meetings. That's process number one, where information from the high school is disseminated back to the community on what's going on at the high school. In terms of your second question, so the positions on the high school are a nominated position. So the board here nominates two representatives to go up to the high school at each reorganization meeting.
So, again, President Jaime, I appreciate your response, but that was not my question. My question is, and I'll repeat it, if the community is not happy or feels that there is a lack of trust or lack of confidence, what is the process to pull back the representatives, either one or two?
So there is no process. What you would need to do, in fact, is you would need to petition the rest of the board to pull us back.
And that petition would be determined and provided at what time? During a Board of Ed meeting?
So I do want to kind of take a step back here because, as Mr. Jaime said, the members of this board nominate and elect two of its members to serve on the Central High School Board. I'm not sure that there is a petition process that would now allow the board to reverse its previous decision. I would have to look into whether there is a legal mechanism to do that. There is a legal procedure to have board members removed, which is an entirely different process, and removing a board member would require them to have engaged in some type of really egregious action that the Commissioner of Education would feel was illegal or somehow really against the interests of the district. We're talking about stealing public funds or things of that magnitude, not simply someone being upset with a board member or having a personal conflict of interest or personal conflicts with that board member. So I just want to kind of lay the groundwork in terms of the seriousness of a board member removal. So that's one thing. And also, I think that you had mentioned, Ms. Lewis, about a lack of transparency, and that kind of touches on what I said earlier. To the extent that the two board members who serve on the Central High School Board learned information about, let's say, an employee matter, they would not be then able to share that information here with this district on this board, because that's a separate board and they're bound by a separate duty of confidentiality to that board. So to the extent that board members or community members here are concerned that they're not receiving enough information or that it's not transparent enough, I just want everyone to understand that oftentimes that's not because someone has made a personal choice not to share information. It's because they have a legal duty to keep much of that information confidential.
And I understand that, and I appreciate you saying that. But at the same time, this board did not even inform the public, and I listened to the tapes today, of even there was an acting principal at Elmont Memorial or that our principal was on sabbatical. Whereas last year, when there was an acting principal at Sewanica, it was one of the first statements that President Jaime made. So when I ask for transparency, I do not need to know the full 411, but at the same point, I need for you to understand that I would like to be informed when my delegates or representatives are moving to another board to come back to treat me like the same way you would treat a Sewanica parent. Because you came here and you said it, but you were silent in August, you were silent in September. So I ask, again, if there is no process, if there is something you need to look on or look into, that I would like for an answer to be given on what, if there is a procedure and if how it works for us to express, and I'm hoping that my community members will tell you their own feelings, but express the lack of confidence that we have. And if we have a lack of confidence, that has to be addressed by our board. So I ask that be forwarded to the follow-up for the next meeting.
Good evening, members of the Board of Education and the Elmont community. My name is Tricia Wong, and I live on Parkway Drive. According to the Roberts Rule, no introduction was made, so can we introduce everyone to the audience, please?
Sure, I'll start. My name is Michael Jaime. I'm the board president.
Dr. Tamika Battle-Burkett, the board vice president.
Tiffany Capers, board trustee.
Nancy Garlick, board trustee.
Thank you.
Dr. Michael Kintara, board trustee.
Sharon Early Davis, board trustee.
Okay, thank you. I think, you know, just as Attorney Gomez mentioned and gave us a schooling on etiquette, that's etiquette 101. Thank you. The dismissiveness, unresponsiveness, condescension, and opacity displayed at the high school's board meeting on September 20th was palpable. I know that many board members are serving because you all care about children and the community that you serve. This is why I'm pleading with the five remaining board members to vote to replace our high school representatives, Mr. Michael Jaime and Dr. Tamika Battle, because they have lost the pulse of our community. In addition, I have some questions. I hope that the board will be responsive, respectful, and transparent, considering that all of the questions fall under the Freedom of Information Law, and our community is entitled to know. Actually, we are entitled to hear the answers spoken aloud without me having to request this information in writing, because I do not want to be the only one privy to the answers to these questions. First, Mr. Rosner, we have not personally met. I do have some questions, and please do not take them personally. This is just for transparency. Mr. Jaime, you stated to Ms. Lewis that a superintendent's rating is personnel issues. What is the New York State policy on requesting a teacher's rating or a principal's rating?
I'll defer to the superintendent that is more conversant in that than I am.
Oh.
So you're
talking about teachers.
We'll get to. My question is, what is the New York State policy on requesting, no, it's not confidential, please look it up, requesting a community member can get a teacher's rating to know, is that teacher highly effective, ineffective, developing, you know, which one did I miss? They're highly ineffective, developing, effective, and highly effective. So, according to New York State, you can request. So, am I correct or am I not?
So, and I'm sorry, I didn't write down your name. Would you mind repeating
it? It is Tricia Wong, W-O-N-G.
Thank you, Ms. Wong. I appreciate that. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're referring to with regard to teachers and that scoring is what we call the APPR score
correct.
Of the teacher. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yes. So certain portions of an APPR score can be revealed to the public if it is a final score, but much of what goes into that overall report, so, for example, comments about the teacher's performance.
I know that.
Okay.
I'm just asking.
Sure, and it seems that you're very up to speed on this, but because you said you wanted everyone to understand, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page, that those additional elements would not be subject to what we call FOIL, the Freedom of Information Law, which is a request that a community member could make for copies of this information. So there's very limited amounts of information that we can reveal about a teacher's rating and scoring.
Okay, but you can reveal the rating. I'm not talking about the comments. The rating is foilable, and if a parent, any parent, wants to know how their teacher or the building principal is doing, they can request this. That is the New York State law. Now, why is it that you can request this for the teachers, the building principals, but not the superintendent?
It's a different contract. So the teachers fall under APPR.
Uh-huh.
Superintendents do not fall under that because they're contracted employees.
Okay. So the superintendent's rating is confidential.
It's part of his personnel record.
There's no
rating. The way we process it is, well, the document that we use is not an approved document. It's a document from the New York State School Board.
So we can get that document?
The document is on the New York State School Board
website. If you're using it, so the district should have that if we request that, correct?
The blank document.
You're not sending me to the New York State School Board to get that.
The blank document.
Right.
You can get a copy of the blank document, or if you don't want to get it from the school district and you want to get it readily, you can access that on the New York State website.
I think I'd like to get it from the school district, the taxes that I pay. Yeah.
Absolutely. So if you give Ms. Delahanty your information on how you would like to receive it, mm-hmm. she will get it to you.
Okay. My next question is, does the Elmont School District have a formal sabbatical policy for administrators and teachers? What is the process for requesting it, and who approves or denies it?
So we do not have a formal process, and the same way it is an employee's right to request it, we would negotiate with that employee and their bargaining unit, and they would provide us documentation, and it would be reviewed by the superintendent. The superintendent would then present it to the board for approval or non-approval.
Is the policy for sabbatical in the administrative contract?
So I am not aware of any type of language in the contract, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that language is not in the contract.
Can you find out and let us know?
Absolutely.
In addition to the teacher's contract?
Absolutely.
Okay. Ms. Wong, I'm sorry, could we pause for one moment so that I could ask Mr. Jaime a question? That
sure.
would be all right. Ms. Wong, I apologize for that. If you may continue at this time.
Okay. When was the last Board of Education walkthrough of each elementary school?
So due to the pandemic, mm-hmm. we did not have any walkthroughs, but the walkthroughs will be conducted this coming school year.
When was the last time it was conducted?
It would have been in 2019.
Okay. How many walkthroughs are done per building.
How many? So the superintendent and central office staff do many walkthroughs. Mm-hmm. The board usually does one to possibly two walkthroughs. But
per year?
Per year.
Per building?
Per building.
Okay. Is that during the school day or not during the school
it's
day?
It's at the convenience of the board. So board members can go at different times. We don't go as a group. Mm-hmm. So it's at the board members' convenience, at their time, when they have the time to basically either on their personal schedule or their business professional schedule, that's when they would talk to the superintendent and have that walkthrough.
Okay. And this question is directly to Mr. Rosner. Mr. Rosner, when was the last time you did a walkthrough of each building?
Probably about 4 hours ago.
They're all laughing.
I'm in every building. Well, let me take that back. I'm in multiple buildings every day, every classroom, tenured teachers, untenured. They'll tell you that I'm aggressive, and I do it to support our teachers.
Thank you. What has the board done to encourage your community to get engaged? How often do you consult or meet with community members, for example, the PTSA or civic leaders?
So through a couple of different initiatives that we have done, of course, through the pandemic, there were multiple community Zoom meetings with the community as a whole district and on an individual building-by-building basis. And I believe there are some building principals that still conduct those Zoom meetings as well as in-person meetings with parents and community members, and it's attended by central office staff, board members, and Mr. Rosner on occasion.
Okay, and when was the last time that was done?
So Mr. Rosner did a meeting last week, I believe Monday? Yes, at the library, and it was a health and safety meeting.
And there, a board member was in attendance?
That I cannot tell you because I was not at that meeting.
Right.
But you're welcome to ask any board member whether or not they were in attendance.
Were there any board members in attendance? Okay, so the follow-up question to that is, when was the last meeting with any, you know, civic leader or PTSA that a board member was present?
Let's see. So I can tell you that I used to serve on the Argo Civic civic meeting. I was the president. We have not reignited the civic yet, but I served on that board, and I am in constant contact with members of the community, and I'm accessible. You're able to call me, email me, and in my 15 and a half years, I've always made myself accessible. I've attended events in district. I've attended events out of district that involved our school district. And I've been a constant supporter here in the community with local elected officials here at their local offices in Albany and in D.C.
Okay. So you mentioned that you've been accessible, which... I wanted to know, since what system do you have in place to hear community concerns other than the monthly board meetings? Meaning, how do you keep yourself abreast of the community's needs and concerns?
So I often talk to building principals. I talk to Mr. Rosner. I talk to teachers. I talk to residents when I'm in the community. I talk to students.
So you said residents. In what forum do you see residents in the community? Are you talking your next-door neighbor or on the block?
Not in formalized forums.
Okay, so what formalized forum do you have to hear concerns other than the monthly board meetings, to read the pulse of your community, to see when you are out of touch with the community?
So I would say that, and I'm speaking for myself, and any other board member can answer if they choose to. There are no formalized forums besides these board meetings. this board meeting is where you can find us. Anyone that wants to talk to us knows on the first Tuesday of the month, you can come to a board meeting. The board meetings were held at Elmont Road for a period of time due to the pandemic. Prior to that, we were in the buildings. Prior to that, we were on Zoom. Prior to that, we were in the community when there was no pandemic.
So, if there
and
was
so I don't
your contact information. The district website has your contact
right, and the, district website has our contact information as well as email addresses, what we look like, I believe, and like I said, I would give other board members the opportunity to chime in.
So since the board make policy, and if there's a storm brewing, how do you, you know, put measures in place to make sure that the community is ready? And I don't mean a literal storm.
I understand.
I mean things are brewing. How do you put out that fire? Since, you know, you're saying that this is the forum, one Tuesday every month. Is there annual surveys that's conducted with members of the community to see how, you know, concerns that they have, other than the report from the principal? Because not everyone has a student in the Elmont School District. So they may not be privy, but they are taxpayers. And, you know, we do know that our school performance equals our property value. So how do you keep those members that do not have students in the current, in the district, they live here but they don't have children, how do you keep them or keep yourself abreast of what's happening in the community?
So we have newsletters that go out to every household on a quarterly or more than...
I don't recall getting any.
So it's called the Dialogue? You've never seen the Dialogue?
If you have children, as I said,
no, the Dialogue goes out to every home. It's
and,
not,
and that's
it's,
directly it's, from the board?
It's directly from the school district, and it has superintendent information. It has information on the board. It has information on different programs going on at all six buildings.
And what was the last edition of the Dialogue? Because I want to make sure I didn't miss it.
There was one that went out just recently. It was a summer dialogue.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, good evening, board. Good evening, everyone. My name is Samuel Lewis. As I say, I'm from Valley Stream. And Mr. Rosner, I'm liking your Mets blue suit. I thought you were supposed to be a Yankees fan.
I am.
But you were in a Mets blue. I just wanted to thank everyone for their time. As a matter of fact, while I'm on the aspect of time, what's your policy on beginning your meeting on time? Because, you know, I think this is my first time at a board meeting. And, you know, we came from a meeting at Alden Terrace. That's why it's a school of excellence, because being on time is a mark of excellence. And... you know, but I still want to acknowledge you for apologizing, but is there a policy for beginning on time?
So we do not have a policy on beginning on time. Again, I want to apologize for the tardiness of beginning the meeting. We were talking about issues from earlier when we had our audit committee. We were talking about personal items, we were, again, talking about personal items that we were trying to resolve in that executive session so that we can make a follow-up decision going forward.
Yeah, well, I'd definitely like to encourage it, because on your agenda, the next meeting in November says 8 o'clock. So
right.
If we can begin at 8 o'clock, it will help.
Absolutely. It's always been our utmost importance to begin on time and end on time, because we know that members of the community make it out here to hear what's going on in the district, and it's important to meet that expectation that if we say 8 p.m., we start at 8 p.m. So going forward, that will not be a problem again.
Yeah,
thank
because
you.
Because as I said, you know, we had to be in that meeting, and it started on time and finished on time. So, again, a mark of excellence.
Thank you. I wanted
to also ask about the goals. I know that the bond proposal is in process. Again, Ms. Warfield gave us an overview, I guess, of the schedule, because I think the schedule is that for June to September, you would be dealing on security. I missed your meeting last week in the library on security, so... is that on track?
So it's awesome that you mentioned that, because that was one of the things that we were talking about in the executive session as well. We have started a bond capital projects committee that's going to be chaired by Ms. Capers and Mr. Mafia, who's absent this evening, and we are looking for members of the community to participate in that process. So that information can be disseminated out quicker, and information can be there's a participation with stakeholders from each building that are speaking with the board and the construction manager and the district architects.
And I'm just going to answer your question directly. We are on time, on schedule. We're at the mercy of state ed with these approvals and permits and things like that, so we have all the permits for our safety vestibules that will start construction within probably a week or two. We're meeting with a few building principals tomorrow, and that is on track. They're ready to begin tomorrow if we had to, but we want to do meetings and kick it off properly. Everything else is in process. On the website, if you look at the bottom, it says initiatives. There's a bond initiative there. I will update that with the latest photos, financial information, once this really starts to pick up steam. So I will let the community know in November that the website has been updated, and I will stay aggressive with updating that so you get all the information.
Okay, thank you. And so that's in relation to the bond proposal goal. That's the whole aspect.
That's correct.
Right. In terms of academics, are there any... I mean, thank you again, Dr. Garcia, and not Dr., right? Mr. Spinato, well, doctor in the future, hopefully. But in terms of academic goals, I mean, just as they presented, I don't think it was probably a fair assessment based on the pandemic. But, you know, as we go forward, that's why I was asking about the SMART...
SMART goals.
Yeah. Right. Are there... not ambiguous goals, but specific goals that we are, I guess, targeting to be in, I guess, competition with the other districts around us? Because one of the things that I have observed is that as families are looking for properties to purchase, one of the first things they look at is the school district. And if
Absolutely.
The school district is under, they go to another community. So how are we more or less, you know, focusing on establishing to be like the School of Excellence, a district of excellence?
So the principals will tell you we've been working since August on our action plans. These aren't mandated. These are continuous improvement plans with very, very specific data. We take some of the data through the pandemic, but more importantly, we look at the current data that we have, running records, state assessments, things like that. And the federal law says you have to use multiple data points. You can't just use one. So we put that together in an action plan that will be posted on our website. Every school will have one. It includes math, ELA, SEL, social-emotional learning. We have a recess plan. We have everything that we wanted to address is in this plan. It's a very detailed plan, very specific, and I'm proud to say that in my personal opinion and professional, from what I've seen from last year, we're probably a step away from two more schools being Blue Ribbon Schools of Excellence. And that's a feather in the cap of the community. Now, I need to go through that data again because the data is still very rough because of the last 2 years, but I'm confident that this can happen.
Thank you. So I'm looking forward at least to see that data.
I will let everyone know in November. I'll make a note that I'll refer you to the website. I'll actually put up a picture so you can see each of the action plans. If I'm not done with them, I'll let you know, but because we're still getting more recent data from our running records and some of our local assessments. So I'll do my best to have it by the next board meeting.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Mr. Lewis, I just want you to know how many texts I'm going to receive about you saying that I'm wearing the Mets colors. Okay? I just want you to know that. So
I was going to say I like the suit.
Good evening to the board. Good evening, parents, teachers, faculty. I know it's late for all of us, but thank you so much for what you're doing for our community. The legal representative was very clear to outline the etiquette we are expected to follow.
Can you just state your name, please?
We are asked to outline our etiquette, to have etiquette. My name is Malika Hyman from Rutland Street in Valley Street. The attorney has asked us to follow proper protocol in approaching the board, but nobody introduced themselves. How is it that you're expecting us to conduct ourselves a certain way, but you're not holding yourself to that standard? I do appreciate that you apologized, but you have to lead from the front. You have to lead by example. Additionally, children are asked not to chew gum in the classroom. And one of the board members continues to chew gum. It's an attitude of indifference, and it's not appreciated. So we are expecting a different level and a higher level of performance from the board. Additionally, when it comes to your timeliness, this is not the first elementary school meeting where you've appeared 45 minutes late. I would like to request that if you're running over your time, that you adjourn and resume your session after you have addressed the audience. When we are talking about etiquette, please set the standard and lead from the front, like I said before. Now, on with my question. How do you determine the amount of funding that each school receives within our district?
I think it's on.
Hi. My name's Tom Galante.
Hi, Mr. Galante.
Make sure I do the etiquette right.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
In fact, your question's kind of timely because once a year we file with the state. It's something that's new in the last few years based on budget and cost for every single building. So it is available state. It's for last year is available. I have to file that in another couple months. The allocation of funds for what we call the principal's budget or the school budget, which is textbooks, supplies, all the consumable materials that are used in each school, is a formula that provides basically the same amount of money per student to each school, just to make sure there's equity. There's also funding that's allocated based on the number of students that need ELA services, so it's more or less service and need driven, and then formulas from there. That's for everything other than staff.
Okay.
For the staff budgets, that's done through the superintendent and the administration and the principals, which more or less follows existing policies that you need to have certain class sizes, which then drives more or less the teacher allocations and teacher aides and so forth.
So there's a certain number that's allocated pretty much per student.
Yes, and then we take a look at that each. So, for example, it may not be the right correct number. I don't have it with me, but say $70 per student for textbooks. But there's a formula that we use to make sure there's an even distribution.
So there's equity across the district.
Yes, that's the goal.
So you work diligently to achieve that.
Yeah, that's the goal. We implemented that in like 1985.
Okay. My next question.
And then we update it every few years. We look to update it.
Thank you. Which of the six elementary schools received Title I proceeds, and how are they distributed?
Yeah, it's all six. In the past year, maybe it's been two now, it's all six schools that are eligible. And the distribution of that is based on a federal formula, which more or less says on a per-student basis, based on the at-risk level, and that drives how much has to be allocated. So it's all formula-driven based on what the way the federal government requires it to be done by the state, which passes it on to us.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. My next question. What is the board's policy or policies pertaining to building repairs?
So there is no policy. Building repairs are identified by a number of different mechanisms. So we have custodians in every building that identify repairs that are needed. We have our building principals that identify things that they would like to see in a coming year or over the course of a couple of years. And between those two parties, along with the superintendent and the board, we work with the building consultant to allocate funds to address those repairs or improvements that are needed.
Okay. Before I leave the mic, if I might just have an opportunity to echo what Ms. Wong said. We are very displeased with the members who have been appointed from this board to the high school district. We are asking, I am asking as a parent of a student in this district, to have those parties recalled. I understand per legal representation, there's no active policy, but you will be looking into it. The last time we attended a meeting at the high school, we were told that policies can be created, generated. So perhaps there needs to be a policy created where we can recall members who fail to respond to the pulse of the community. We would like that, please, researched in a timely manner and an answer provided. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you, parents.
Thank you. Before you start, I would just ask for like a very quick 1-minute recess. Could I have a motion, please? Move Ms. Garlick.
Are we going into executive session?
No.
Okay, then you don't need to recess for that. We'll just pause.
Okay, so we're just going to pause. Excuse me. Excuse me. Thank you.
Hi, good evening. I'm Dale Davids. I'm an Elmont resident. All right, so I was listening to everyone talk, right? And you were mentioning about a dialogue thing that goes in the mail. I haven't seen that thing in a while. So I jumped on the website, and I was taking a look here. This could be a really good tool to put information out. The website, I went on to the board members. I see a lot of information here, but a good addition I think could go here is some kind of feedback page, like, hey, we want to hear from you. Put your information here. What do you want to know about? Because right here, I see information, but I don't see any way to interact with somebody. There's a phone number. Hopefully when I call, I'll get someone. But if there's a drop-down, you know, I fill it out, and maybe somebody will get back to me, or at least have a record of what happened.
Thank you for that suggestion. So the superintendent's email address is on there, as well as, I believe, the district clerk. We will take your recommendation and work with our website developers to have something created to create a feedback mechanism.
Yeah, I'm looking directly at the website. I don't see anyone's email address.
And we'll add that to the website as well as the app.
All right, so I have a few other things. I have some questions. Is there a committee of educators or students to examine educational programs before they are implemented by the school or the district?
Yes. Before we buy any program or invest in anything, we have a committee of administrators, teachers, that absolutely vet each thing that we purchase for our schools. The last thing that we did was the community inclusive community read, where we had a team together. We read each book. We made sure the books were appropriate for our students. So we take pride in the fact that a committee is charged with that. So, yes.
Well, where do we find information about such committees?
That one is not a parent committee. That's a school-based committee. But the one that we're most recently talking about was the one with the bond steering committee, which is important for us. The community had faith in us to support that bond overwhelmingly, and we're going to have Mr. Mafia and Ms. Capers chairing that, as well as myself and any member of the community that would join, and I'll have that on the website with an application and an informational piece. So I'm excited to get started with that. That was some of what we were talking about tonight.
All right.
And sir, I'm sorry. Building Advisory Committee is a great committee to join at the building level. It's comprised of the principal, teachers, parents. It's a great way to give feedback at a school-based level, and it's something that, as a principal, I used to really take pride in because I've got feedback directly from the people that were part of my school community. So Building Advisory Committee, and those are listed on the calendar and on the website for each school.
Awesome. All right. Is there a board policy in the implementation of programs in the district?
There's no board policy. Any board member can recommend a program to the superintendent. The superintendent and central office staff would then investigate and do their research on that project or program, and then come back and do a presentation to the board for, again, review and or approval or denial.
Is there any policy for the discontinuation of a program in the district?
A discontinuation of a program would probably follow the same suit. It would be researched by central office along with the superintendent. Superintendent would then present his or her feedback or position as to why the program should be discontinued to the board for approval.
What is the district's policy on requesting law enforcement in the buildings?
When you say requesting law enforcement, you mean as a full-time security or if we need help with a specific incident?
Let's say you thought there might be some need for it other than what's normally there.
We have great communication with the 5th Precinct and the POP officers at the 5th Precinct. We work with Officer Caggiano very, very closely, and Officer Ojeda. So we would reach out to them if it was a school-based issue. If it was something more severe, we have a contact with Homeland Security, Officer Natale, who presented at the last meeting last week. So if necessary, right here on the cell phone, I can get to them, and they can be here at a moment's notice. Yes and no. Sometimes they come in, they do what's called a park stop and walk, or I forget the phrasing of it. We went to a meeting with the commissioner, and they all park their cars, and they come in. They've been making rounds every day. They've been coming into the building. So there are exceptions to that, but if there were an incident, then usually it would require either myself or a principal to call 911 and say we need help, or if there was something maybe that was coming up and we're anticipating a traffic issue or something, then I would reach out to the POP officers proactively instead of using 911. Okay. Every scenario would be different.
Okay. It says in the bylaws that the audit committee consists of 3 non-board members. Who are these individuals?
So at this time, we have no individuals from the community that are members of the audit committee.
How do we find out about how to join that?
So you would, so there is a policy on who can join the audit committee, but what was done in the past was anyone that was interested in joining the audit committee would submit a resume to the district clerk, and the district clerk would then present it to the board for review and approval or denial.
Okay, that answers that. Okay, that's all I got.
Thank you.
Grace and peace, everyone. My name is Lynette Battle. I'm a resident of Valley Stream, New York, and I have several questions. Is my brother's keeper at the elementary schools? If yes, which one?
It's at all of the schools, and the answer is yes.
Okay. How long has my brother's keeper been implemented in the Elmont School District?
So I believe we received the notification from the state. Was it last year or the year before? So in 2021, we received the designation as an MBK community school.
Okay.
School district.
Okay. And what is the data for the success rate of My Brother's Keeper?
So I actually emailed the person at State Ed for the data on that. There is no data on elementary schools because we are actually the first elementary school district in the state to become a community, whereas the other school districts across the state are primarily middle school and high school. But the graduation data is similar to the graduation data of our Elmont Memorial and Sewanaka High Schools. And I don't know if Ms. Cabell would want to fill in any additional information. Yeah, I'm putting you on the spot. And I'm only putting her on the spot because her son just graduated this past June as a My Brother's Keeper Fellow in Westchester County, or Yonkers. The Bronx. Excuse me, the Bronx. So she is has definitely been ingrained in the program. She knows a lot about the program, is helping us with the program, as well as she presented last month on the basics, which is a component program that addresses birth to school age. So we've incorporated all of these programs in to actually start impacting our students at an earlier age than when they first get into our buildings.
Okay. How many students are enrolled in the MBK program itself, the mentoring side?
So all of our students are enrolled. There's no application process. There's no and there was a question earlier about the tenants and how the tenants were tied into this presentation that Dr. Garcia and Mr. Spinato presented. And basically what we're doing is those tenants are applicable to all students. We want all students to have mastered literacy at a certain point, because mastery of literacy then feeds into mastery of other curriculums across the district.
Okay. Who introduced My Brother's Keeper to the district?
So I met Dr. Olson, who is the person in charge at the State Education Department, probably about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and he explained the program to me. You know, told me to do my research on all the MBK communities within New York State. At the time, there were no communities on Long Island, well, in Suffolk, in Nassau County that had the designation. There were school districts that were receiving funding, but they did not meet all of the criteria that was a part of the application. And so that's when I approached, I believe at that time it was Mr. Harper, to start talking about getting the designation, because not only does the designation bring, you know, of course, it increases our reputation as a good school district, but it also came with state dollars that were specifically allocated to students of color, and making sure that we continue to close the achievement gaps. So prior to Elmont, Roosevelt, and Uniondale becoming communities last September or October, it was just Brentwood in Suffolk County that was a community.
Okay. Who wrote the grant/application for My Brother's Keeper for the district?
So there was no grant process. The grant process is an ongoing process, and that once I got Dr. Olson, from State Ed to present to Mr. Harper and then Mr. Rosner, Mr. Rosner worked with the central office team to gather all of the information that was required to complete the application.
How much funding has the district received thus far from the MBK program?
That I can't tell you.
$10,700.
There you go, $10,700.
Yeah.
$10,700 per school
for the year.
For the whole.
$11,000.
All right.
in the ballpark.
No.
That's per district.
So it's separate. So there's a elementary designation and there's a high school designation. Correct.
And how was the funding, how has the funding been allocated? Is it across the board?
State formula. The state more or less told us here's so much for mentors here, you know, for each component of it.
Is this somewhere where we can review it and get copies of it?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
You'll post it on the website?
I'll make sure everybody gets it. Absolutely.
Who determines how the funds are allocated? You said it's a state formula, so that's the only way it's allocated. The funds are allocated?
Yes.
Yeah, and I can tell you that the state went through the list of can you buy a T-shirt, can you buy, I mean, they went through the actual purchases. Yeah, we can look at that.
Yeah, I don't want to guess. I'll get it for you.
But we can look at that.
Now, I just want to make one thing clear. It's very unique that an elementary school district is participating in this program because most of the pillars of the MBK program are specific to high school. Mm-hmm. So graduation rates, graduation to job force, things like that. The pillar that we focused on was two things. One is community service, which is going to be a big push this year. And the other one is the pillar of all students being on grade level by third grade. All the research points to that if they're not on grade level by third grade, that gap widens and widens as you get past that third grade. Now, those are the only two that are specific to an elementary school district. We don't have the mentors like the high school does. We it's different. So it's very unique. So this is the year where we've been meeting and talking about how can we best use this program to work with our community, work with our young scholars. So we have our Teachers of Tomorrow program. We're going to build a pipeline of teachers right here in Elmont where our young students and pushing them into a career in teaching and in education. We're going to do community service projects. That's the only way an elementary school district can feed into the MBK pillars. So we're still working through that. I have a great team that's working on that. We have a nice connection with Dr. Alston at the State Ed Department, who we just spoke to maybe last week. So we're really cooking with this, and I'm excited to see those results. So I know somebody had asked about what's the data. It's different at our level than it is at the high school. It's just a different program.
And is there a spending plan for MBK for what you spend the items, what you spend on the items that you purchase?
So is there a spending plan? Yes, and that's all guided by state ed and some of the research that Tom was, not Mr. Galante, was just talking about. And I'll get that to you.
Okay.
Yep.
Two more questions. What is the district's policy for adding / removing volunteers from school activities and or clubs?
We do not have a policy.
Okay. I want to go back to the...
So
you want to share?
Let me correct. So there's a...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to not address you directly. I just wanted to funnel the questions through the chair of the board, Mr. Jaime. But what I was stating was that I do believe there is a board policy regarding visitors on school property, which is what most of the volunteers would be classified as. So certainly if someone was a visitor and acting inappropriately or doing anything that would violate the school district policies in terms of how they interact with teachers or particularly our students, our young scholars, they would not be allowed to volunteer anymore. So is that kind of what you had in mind, what the parameters are around people being in the schools as volunteers?
No. Actually, it was based on a response that was said on the high school level. But if it's done on the high school level, it has to be done for the entire district. So I need to understand what the policy is for volunteers and adding or removing them.
I see. Okay. That's certainly something we can look into because I believe that there is a visitors on school property which may cover some of those questions about volunteers, and I'm happy to look at that.
I would like to go back to the audit committee question. You talked about a resume. What would be the requirement for non-board members to be a part of the audit committee? Because I'm likely going to send in my resume.
Sure. So the requirement is that you have a finance or financial understanding of being able to read a financial statement, understand different governmental accounting rules, and I believe, I don't know if he wants
CPA
to.
Would be perfect. CPA. Somebody that's.
But hold on, I'm sorry. How many people on the board are CPAs? Raise your hand.
That's why you would look to say to add people from the community to the committee to bring in people with those skills.
So a volunteer, I just need to be clear, the volunteer from the community who wants to be a part of the process would need to be a CPA? That's a requirement?
Yeah, I mean, it's up to the board to decide. All I'm saying is that normally when people are added to a committee process, it's moved.
Normally in most organizations, when you have a committee and you're looking to look for qualifications to bring people onto the committee, you look at people with expertise on the subject matter that's going to be discussed. And in this case, it's audits, it's CPA work, and it's financial statements and notes. That's like a 100-page document. So if I were to say, who would be the best kind of, it'd be a CPA-type people that could sit down, read it, understand it all, and help. That would be that.
So an executive director
but
who
that
ran
over. But the board could decide to pick someone who, you know, runs a nursery school. They could decide to do whatever they'd like to do, you know, as a board.
So an executive director of a business improvement district with a budget of over $1 million who went over budgets and things of that nature, would they be qualified?
Absolutely.
It's for the board to decide, yeah.
Okay.
But you
I'm
have
putting
a,
in my
you
resume.
Have a, you have a background in finance, and so that's what we're looking for. It's not a requirement of the board members.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Good evening.
My name is Dwayne Palmer, 30-year resident of Almont. Put three kids through this school, Dutch Broadway, three kids through the high school. I currently have a granddaughter that's in this school in Dutch Broadway. And up to this point, it's been a great experience being an Almont resident. Mr. Rosner, haven't had an opportunity to meet yet, so I understand that you're doing fantastic work over here, so thank congratulations
you.
To you.
Thank you very much.
I do want to go back and just circle back to my brother's keeper and ask one question that was not answered last time I asked it. Is there a member of the board, current or former, or some employee of the Almont School District that receives any type of incentive, stipend, bonus, finder's fee, payment, or anything for bringing my brother's keepers to Almont?
There is no board member that has received any type of financial remuneration for bringing in the program. That's not how the program works.
Okay. Thank you very much. I can say that as a 30-year resident, I've probably voted to the extent that I could vote for many of the members on this board when the election came up. I can say that even though I firmly supported you during your election, there's certainly a time when people will have to part ways respectfully. And I think that we in the Elmont community, and I'll speak for myself, may be at that breaking point based on things that have happened that we obviously can't talk about because this is a segregated meeting, even though my vote and my money is not segregated when I contribute to the school budgets. But I'll respect the process. But I just want to understand that as board members, you are elected to 4-year terms by the community, correct?
3-year terms.
3-year terms, okay. And that's at the elementary school level, correct?
Correct.
And then from the elementary school level, each school can appoint, is that the correct word?
Each district will appoint a member.
A member of the elected body to ascend up to the Sewanee school level.
Correct.
And that happens at this level right here.
Correct.
So that process is an appointment, not an election, correct?
Correct.
So anything that can be appointed can be unappointed, correct?
Well, the...
It's the real vote. So, I'm sorry, sir. I just wanted to clarify that when we talk about an appointment, it's not a matter of certain board members saying, okay, you and you are now part of the Sewanee Central High School Board. It is a vote that this board must take each year to approve those individuals to ascend up to the high school board that you're talking
Understood.
About.
Understood. So
yeah.
If I'm looking at your agenda, right? Mm-hmm. Excuse me. 30 years ago, I didn't need these. I see on line item B, it says something that says other matters. And in subdivision 2, it says other items for board and action attention. Correct? What is the process or policy that determines what is considered other action items or agenda? Right? And the caption B, where it says other matters, sub-item 2, it says other items for board action or attention.
Right. So that agenda item, along with all of the agenda items, are actually set by the superintendent in collaboration with the board leadership.
Right.
In this case, it would be the board president and vice president.
My question, thank you very much for that clarification. My question is what is the policy or procedure that decides or determines what is considered other action or attention? Like, how do we determine what that is? Is anything the board decides?
That would be what the superintendent and board leadership decides. But I will say that if the question that you're
You know what the question is that's yeah, coming. You
the
absolutely
question
know
that's coming
you absolutely know
how
coming.
Do you get your item on this agenda? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that was going to be my final question. You kind of jumped ahead of me. So,
okay.
All right. Clearly, you're a great attorney. By the way, as an attorney, do you represent the board for Elmont District or do you represent the board members personally?
That's a great question. Mm-hmm. I represent the board as a unit. I do not represent any one individual
right.
board
member. So if the community has an issue with a board member or certain board members, your role is to give us the policy, the taxpayers, the policy that can help best implement the community's concerns?
My role is to represent the board,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily the community. We know
right.
that there may be many different viewpoints and perspectives in the community. My job is to represent the board and to help the superintendent and the board move this district forward.
What's the board's job? It's to represent the...
The board's job is to reflect and represent the views of the community that elected them to these...
Okay,
meetings.
Thank you very much for that. So to the extent that community members collectively feel that a board member or certain board members are no longer representing the community's view, the question that I want to understand is, what is the process, policy, to call for either a recall vote or to petition this board by adding on item B, sub-item 2, a question of how or can we recall a member or certain members from their appointed position, not elected position, at the next level, which happens here at this level.
Sure. So these board members, like any other elected official that you may think of, once you elect that person, yes, you want them to reflect your views, but that doesn't mean that your state senator, your congressman, your president is always going to vote or act in the way that we each individually want, right?
Right.
There are times when we may want them to go left, and they go right.
Correct.
But we have elected them to that seat, and we need to trust them to make whatever decisions they make, unless they're violating the law, in which case we could have them removed on those grounds.
Right.
But just because we don't agree with an individual decision that they make doesn't mean that we can just recall them. Our remedy is to wait until the next election and vote differently. So that's the case with this
well,
board
my,
and with every other.
Well, time out.
I'm sorry, if I could
Time out. My question is not to recall them from their elected positions.
Sure.
I understand that they're sitting in their terms for 3 years.
Yeah.
My question is that how do we recall them when the community has a disagreement with actions that they have taken or the unclear communication that they've enacted, the obfuscation, right? The lies by clearly telling us something happened that clearly didn't happen. So now we want to have a process to say we no longer trust your fidelity on the other board. You're in an appointed position. How do we, the community, petition the rest of the board that's around here that voted to let them go up to now put an action item on the agenda to take a second vote, maybe they'll pass the second vote, maybe they won't, to recall them off of that other position that we can't talk about, back to this board.
Yeah. Okay. That's a fair question, and I completely understand that question. I am not trying to beat around the bush. The
Which you will.
No, I'm not. I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you straight up that my answer to your question is I don't know. And the reason that I don't know is that I represent many school districts on Long Island and through New York State. Of the many districts that I represent, this is the only district with a structure like Elmont's in which you have an elementary board that then has members that ascend to a high school board. That's a very unique model for Long Island. I think you would all agree that there are very few school districts that have
and has the whiff of impropriety and potentially corruption, or certainly a detachment from the community.
Well, I certainly am not going to agree with that, but I'm providing you with the reason as to why I cannot give you a clear answer at this point, but I will certainly look into it, as I've told the other community members, and share whatever I learn with the community. Sure. What I want to Sure. And I've said I'm going to look into this, but let me explain to you guys why it's not that cut and dry. Once you elect someone to a board and they've been elected to this board, and by electing them to this board, you've trusted them to make a decision as to who goes to the high school board, you cannot just pull someone back.
We're not asking for the election to be rescinded. We're going to wait the 3 years for the reelection. What we're asking for is that appointment that came from... Well, let me ask you this question.
But I think that's where we're...
We're cutting
because
heads.
This is not an appointment. This was an election by this board for those members to go up to the Sewanaka board. That was a resolution.
Minus titles of president, vice president, treasurer, secretary. Uh-huh. Does every board member have an equal vote on this board?
Equal vote.
So then every board member, absent of what you think you're saying is correct, because you say you're not sure. But in reality, this board can convene, and the majority of this board can take a second vote. They can add it to item B, subdivision 2, where it says other actions or attention, because there's no criteria that determines what qualifies as other action or attention. And they can put that right in that subdivision, and then they can take their vote. I'm not an attorney. I just got a high school diploma. But that sounds like pretty sound logic to me. Thank you for your time.
I agree that it sounds really logical. I would just say that the Commissioner of Education has a very specific process regarding how someone can be requested to no longer serve on a board. And there are very few circumstances in which the Commissioner feels it's appropriate to take someone out of a seat that they have been properly put into. And I get that, but I just want everyone to understand that it's not just a matter of saying you don't like someone's opinion.
We're talking about removing them from their appointed position, in which this body right here, voted to let them sit. They can vote to bring them back down.
Evening. My name is Melissa Prasad. I'm from North Valley Stream. I have a question. What is the process for selecting a legal counsel?
The process for selecting legal counsel is that we received RFPs, which are requests for proposals from firms across Long Island, and they detail their services and their fees and their how they will service the district. And based on the feedback information that we get from each board member on the proposals, we made a decision as to which firm we were going to select as our next representative.
So you make that collectively?
Correct.
Okay. My next question is there a stipend or any compensation that is given to members of the school board?
No.
Okay. And who covers the cost for school-related activities that a school board member attends, such as conferences, workshops, lodging, meals, travel, etc.?
That's covered in a board policy where monies that are expended for the, and it's also detailed in the reorganization meeting, which conferences are approved by the board and which conferences are approved for the superintendent and central office staff that would be reimbursed by the school district. So there is the only limitation is on there's no alcohol that would be reimbursed, but airfare or transportation and the cost of the lodging and the cost of the actual conference would be reimbursed. We don't. I do not believe that we have a limitation, but I would trust that any board member that wants to attend a conference would come and present the information to the board so that we could make a collective decision on whether or not the cost was something that was exorbitant or something that was within reason. Each year when we do our budgeting, there is line items that are established for training, which is required by New York State, and ongoing professional development of school for school board members, and those line items are in the budget.
So if you decide you wanted to stay at the plaza, for instance, there is no limitations on, you know, you do stuff,
and I understand what you're saying. So one of our responsibilities is to be fiduciary responsible board members. And so staying at the plaza would not be responsible.
Okay. I just have a quick question. This is out there. Is there a certain amount of time you have when a meeting happens for us to see the minutes from the meeting posted on the website?
So the minutes will usually be posted within a couple of days after the following meeting because we have to approve the board minutes at the next meeting for to make sure that there are any corrections or redactions or information that needs to be added that could have been omitted when the minutes were drafted.
And those minutes are usually never very detailed. It's just like bullets?
No.
There's an audio? Oh, okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Good evening. How you doing?
Good
evening. My name is Angel Ramos. Mr. Rosin, the first time we spoke is via text. It was regards to advocating for a teacher to present or to be present or be able to conduct the graduation with her class, her kids, during the pandemic, because of how everything went. We didn't want her to be left out. Our second conversation was actually regarding children's safety and the incidences which, if somebody would enter a school and do them harm. One of the things, just speaking on that as far as children's safety, is notifications. That day, as far as the lockdown, I received it from my community as far as what was going down, you know, in Elmont or even in Dutch Broadway. On Meacham Avenue, again, I receive a notification late, but by my community, we have to take care of this. In that incident, it was regarding an elderly woman, possibly grandmother to the child, who a male just out of nowhere started grabbing this child. We need to be aware of this. I have a 5-year-old and I have a 7-year-old. I want them to be safe. And the same safety for them I want for everybody else's child in this community. So we need a better notification system.
Can I jump in for one second?
Sure.
Mr. Spinato, Dr. Garcia, and myself completely agree. I'm not happy with the process that we use. I need a centralized system where I could send a message to everybody via email, text, and that's what we're working on. So you will see an improvement in that, I guarantee it. It's going to require some legwork on our part to get email addresses and things like that and keep it clean, keep the data clean, but you will see an improvement in that. I agree 100%. There has to be a better way.
Thank you. And regarding that, you had mentioned as far as the Homeland Security person. So I'm sure they're involved because the school is regulated by the state. The state has a system where immediately if there's a Amber Alert, everybody knows. So if we can tap into that system somehow where parents, you know, with these systems, I believe that they're allocated based on zip code as well. And then parents can either act if they're in that area or they can be aware of what's going on. Because then we have more eyes and ears to catch that person.
Consider it done.
Thank you. I had some other questions. Going back to the MBK, all children are enrolled. But how many participate?
So, as Mr. Rosner explained before, we're in a unique situation where we are the only elementary school in the state that participate in this program. The literacy part of it, all children participate in literacy training, literacy improvement, and so that's across the board. It's all children, and we allocate some of the funds that we get, and Mr. Galante and Mr. Rosner have indicated that they will get the specific numbers per building, but it's allocated across the district equitably, and the second piece is engagement, community engagement, so civics, doing community service projects in the community. So that's not what was said. Every single student is getting funds. So can you let me finish? What I said was that the focus is on literacy and community and civics. So every student is participating in or will participate in a community or civic engagement project. All students, we want all students to be literate. But there are some students within that black and brown diaspora population that will benefit from additional literacy help. And that's where the funding will go.
So now it's not all students.
All students. Yes, and our schools are populated predominantly with children of color. And that's where the building leadership comes in. Building leadership.
So then we need a building leadership. That's not the answer. We need someone from the building or the
So the answer that was given before by Mr. Galante was that he would get the information, specific percentages or a dollar amount on how it's spent per building. What I am saying is on a global level, looking at the fact that our district is populated with students, or we have students primarily of black and brown descent. And we're not saying, the numbers haven't been produced to say that it's 100% across the board. We will look at the numbers again, and if the numbers are correct, they will remain. If the numbers need to be adjusted, they will be adjusted to reflect accordingly.
I just want to add one thing to that, because I want to make it really clear to everyone that the district has a policy of non-discrimination. So we're not going to exclude white students or students who are not students of color from any program in which the district is eligible for.
There was no bond. So the tenets of the My Brother's Keeper program are beneficial to all students. Where?
Can you go to the website and read what it says on the website?
Can you let me finish? Where there is additional services or additional programs that can assist that group of students that the My Brother's Keeper program addresses, that's how the funding will be allocated. So excuse me for saying all, because when I think about my roles and responsibilities, I'm thinking about all children. All children will benefit from this program. We will not use the dollars, the grant dollars that we get from the program for all students. So let me correct myself.
I'm going to jump in for a second. I just wanted to mention one thing, because we've been talking about funding. I place a very, and if you know me, you know this to be accurate. I place a very high premium on accuracy, and I don't want to misspeak. So we applied for a grant last year that was, what was it, $10,500, $11,000. We don't have mentors. That's why this is very unique. I'm going to get you the exact dollar amount, and I will share it with you. I don't want to misspeak and then have to backtrack. So I promise you I will get that for you. So, again, that's why I'm not commenting on funding and who gets what. It's a very limited funding for our district, and as a matter of fact, there's a large portion of it that is shared with the high school, and I don't want to misspeak and tell you how much that is. So it's very unique, and Dr. Alston has been a very good guide for us. He's the assistant commissioner, and we're taking his lead on this. And he was involved with the grant writing and things like that. So I promise I'll come back to you with correct information, and just please allow me to have that time to get that for you. Okay.
You're saying we don't have the mentors. Questions, do you want the mentors?
So we don't have the mentors in the sense that the grant funds that with the mentors at the high school and they have a you know, like that relationship. We have our teachers working the program, and we'll be using that for Teachers of Tomorrow, science research, our community projects. So we do have school-based teachers that we pay out of our own budget to help us run that program.
But instead of paying out of our budget, do you want mentors that will be available and there with their heart?
Explain something. So on the high school level, the high school has two young men that are called fellows. Those fellows are who the mentoring money goes to. So those fellows participate in training upstate, and it covers the cost of traveling back and forth from their home school to the upstate location where they receive
those
training.
Are adults or kids?
Those are young men. So
young
they're
men?
Not, right.
So
they're
teens.
Not students. Teens. Students. Okay. So it's they're not mentors as we understand what the word mentor means. So that funding is allocated to them in order to help them travel back and forth. And what they do is the information that they get when they're
back.
They turnkey it. And so eventually what we want to do is have those young men turnkey to our younger students. And again, when we're fully out of the pandemic, that can happen in a more seamless process.
I think there's a program actually after school where the kids get tutored, even in this building. I think the pandemic might have thrown it off.
Oh, GYO?
I believe that's it, where the high school is coming over here.
Correct.
But now if we know the delay of bringing something good to the younger kids so there's no gap, so that they stay focused, because I've done a couple of programs where they only apply to, say, about 11 or 12 and above. But then you have 10 to 5 that lose out. We don't know the homes. Everybody's home is not perfect.
And this is where this program will excel, because we're providing them with those tools, with the information at a younger level, so that when they become middle schoolers and high schoolers, they can excel into bigger and better things, because they're not first learning the fundamentals in middle school and high school.
But at what expense in time? Because time ticks and these kids are losing out. Like, because of funding, we only had a half day for pre-K here, right? Was it pre-K?
That's correct.
So we only had a half day.
Right.
So they
now
lost,
it's full day.
Yes, it is now full day, this period of school. But that time period, those kids could have learned so much more, because they're in a period of absorbing and learning much.
Agreed. And a lot of that, how that happened, was school board members across Long Island, because we all know that New York City had it, but Long Island was neglected in terms of that. But it took school board members from Long Island petitioning their local representatives to give us the funding, the proper funding, to run a full-day program.
That's just an example.
No,
I'm sure we can
talk about a number of examples of how schools are mandated to do certain things and they're not funded properly by the state or the federal government.
Take advantage of the volunteers. That's what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
We're
all volunteers.
Exactly, but there is so much more out there to fill other roles. So So
anyone that's interested in volunteering, you shouldn't wait to be called to be a volunteer. You should make the call yourself.
Yeah, who are we calling?
This guy right here in Mets Blue.
Okay. I actually heard through my community of a training, you know, and it expired, I think it was on the 27th, where you get training regarding things in DOE. You know, but it's like, where is that? You know, where can a person, right, who doesn't have a computer, doesn't have transportation to go to a library, right, who's isolated, right, because maybe they have so many other obligations, where can they get that information? So I'm giving you the worst scenario, right? You ain't got to answer it.
No, I hear you.
But that information has to spread, you know, and that's part of, I guess somebody else spoke about the where we interact with the community. There should actually be things on the table of all the rules, all the the annual things we can participate in, election dates, all the programs that volunteers are part of, right, like yourselves, and where now we can have that knowledge. And now if we ignore it, that's on us. But at least it's presented to us. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Give your contact information to the district clerk.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Adriana Jackson. I'm living 2250 Goodwin Road, three blocks from Elmont High School. I have a 11th grade that was here in Dutch Broadway before, and now I have a 4 years old. So first I want to thank you everyone for your time. I know that the majority of you are here as a volunteer, and as many of us probably work and do other things and is very tired and stay here long, so I want to thank you for your time. One thing that I want to bring to the board, my daughter, and thank you guys for approving the pre-K, so I'm being beneficial for that because I have a 4 years old, so that is really a great program. I'm a little upset my daughter was not able to get to Dutch Broadway because the school was already full, so they put my daughter in Gotham. So it's been great. People over there are great. I have a complaint, though. A couple of days, the school, I believe, started on the 19th. So a couple of days after, my husband went to pick up my daughter, and he hit his head in a sign on the street. And he got a pretty bad cut. I have a picture here of his cutting his head from that sign. So I speak to the principal at that school, Mr. Mingo, I believe. And he said, this is not with us, school. This, you have to call the city about that sign. And I spent probably an hour and a half calling different people. And they say, this is not me, this is not me, and then called the school board, and I called the school board, and the school board said it's not us, it's the people from the city. So to make a long story short, when I went back a couple days later, Mr. Mingo stopped me and he said, oh, Adriana, somehow your phone call got to the people in school, and someone came here and they looked at the sign and they said they're going to do something about it. It's been over 2 weeks, and the sign's still in the same place. So my concern is that somebody else can also get cut in the head because the sign is not really too high. You can see I'm not a tall, really tall person, and I imagine the sign is right here. And the sidewalk is pretty straight. So you have the street where the car's passing and the sidewalk where you have the sign that you can hit your head. So I would like just to bring to the board to look into that because I don't see nobody taking care of that affair. Okay?
Sure. So Mr. Mingo and Mr. Cavalieri sent me pictures of the sign, and I went and looked at it myself. It's in a weird spot. It's literally in the middle of the sidewalk. It's in a very strange spot. It is not in the jurisdiction of what a school district can do moving a town sign. So we made an outreach. I'm glad they actually got in touch with you. I don't remember the name of the gentleman that I spoke to, but they told me that they would be assured that they would take care of it. I left it at that. I haven't seen the sign since. So I will go back and find out what's happening, and I'll do my best. But it is within the jurisdiction of the county and not the school district.
Okay.
Okay,
thank
but
you.
I will follow up.
Appreciate it.
Okay, you're very welcome.
Thank
if,
you.
If you could, ma'am, if you could just leave at the end your name with Ms. Delahanty so I can get to you. Okay. Thank you.
It's a county sign. I spoke to someone from the county. Sorry.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening. First, I want to thank the community because I know a lot of you are here because there's a lot that's going on that egregious, asinine, shouldn't even be happening. I don't want to get the district involved because I've worked with a lot of you guys who are doing an outstanding job. Mr. Rosner, I admin, thanks for staying up this late. But there's a common thread here. The reason why everyone's here so late is because, and I don't want this to be misrepresented in any way, the elephant in the room, Michael and Tamika need to step off the high school board effective immediately. They keep asking the attorney, and I know you're new, welcome Ms. Gomez, and you be very careful also, like you want to warn me about being a former board member and saying certain things. They came to me because they're trying to figure out what is the board, how the board operates, and how can something like this happen when they're supposed to be representing us? So that's where that came from. So if you were worried about me coming to this meeting, you got another thing coming because this is just a fraction. Guys? Now, I like to approach things in an operational manner and not get personal, but you made this personal. When I sat on the board and you sat there and told me that nobody...
And I don't want to interrupt you. I just want to be clear that I did not say your name. And, in fact, I have never met you before, and I was not planning to address you personally on this. So this was not...
Well, I was the one that they were talking about, Ms. Gomez. And, again, I'm not warning you, and I'm not trying to be threatening or anything else. I'm just saying you might very well be sitting next to Mr. Ramos. You might very well be sitting next to me. So when you represent the board represents us. So make sure when you represent everyone. Because those little comments that you made rub people the wrong way. And it's also discouraging people from wanting to volunteer and wanting to run for office. And it's been a veil of secrecy about who's the board, what's the board. I had parents coming to me saying, who's the board? Who are these? We've never seen them before. What is the board? How does the board? We need to have a board workshop for our members because the reason why you guys are underrepresented is because you don't vote. You don't vote because nobody from the board is telling you what's going on and that they need you to vote. The votes are coming from the north side of Belmont, and the south side is underrepresented. Michael and Tamika, they're representing the people that vote for them. If you don't vote, you're not going to get represented. Simple. Now, I want to address the board members. Garlic, Papers, sorry, Mafia is not here. Can't see from here. Let me get my Garlic, Kintera. Like they said earlier, there's no policy on how you select board members to go up to the high school. There's no policy. You guys just sit in this kumbaya circle and decide who's going to go up to the high school. Well, you know what? This is what happens when you elect the wrong people to go up to the high school. I want to talk to the four of you. I'm sorry that Mafia's not here. This is what happens when you are just as complicit as these two. Because you elected them to sit up on the high school board. And we're asking you, hell, we're pleading with you. Bring them back down. You have that power. We asked you for a special election. Sorry, not a special election. We asked you for a special meeting. Ms. Battle? You turned us down. You turned on your own constituents. You turned on your stakeholders to meet with them and have a conversation. I know we're not supposed to bring up high school. Mr. Doherty returned to work today. And Ms. Battle, you always give a report on the high school. Why didn't you mention that? That's a huge, huge accomplishment for this community that Mr. Doherty returned today and you said nothing. So you need to get the hell off the high school board, period. Now, if you want to throw a misdemeanor at me for saying the truth, let it come. But I might be sitting next to you next go-round. So I want to keep this cordial and have an amicable separation.
Sir,
I see you grabbing the mic. What do you have to say?
Yes, please. I respect your ability to say whatever you need to say. And I know that I'm the bad guy in this meeting. And
you're
accept
not the bad
that.
Guy. But you're new. You're new, but learning about Elmont now.
I'm learning about Elmont, and I am so happy that we have parents who care enough about their children to be here this late at night to express their opinion. So I respect that, and I applaud that.
Thank you.
What I will say is that I would ask you to please be respectful. There's no need to use foul language or to yell at the board. You can get your point across.
I didn't use foul language.
I believe you said hell. I think
hell is a foul language?
Well, you know what? We're in a school building. I think we want to be careful about how we address children.
Hell?
So if you wouldn't say it in front of children, then let's not use it in this building. And I am, again, not trying to disrespect you at
last
all.
Last time I went to church, there was a hell and a heaven. I don't see it as a square. Ms. Gomez, I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you again.
Great.
Again, we might be sitting next to each other once. So, okay, please.
I
understand what you're saying.
I hope that we can sit next to
each
other.
All right, I have questions. I do have questions. I'm sorry. Mr. Michael Jaime is in charge of this meeting, correct? The board? He's the president. So when you guys come out, he speaks on behalf of the board. You need to come out of here on time. 8 o'clock. And don't tell me that you're discussing important business because you're wasting the people that put you there. Oh, I'm sorry, you ran unopposed. The people that didn't know that you're sitting here have work. They have work. They have to go home. They need to get home too. And when you drag this out, I think it's a strategy, so people start leaving. But they're still here. This meeting needs to start on time at 8 o'clock. If you can't finish your meeting in the back, an executive session, by 8 o'clock, after this is over, you go back to executive session and finish with whatever you had. Sorry, I didn't say hell. Oops, I said hell. Meetings need to, from the operational directive vantage point, meetings need to start on time. It's respectful to the community. I know we're stuck with you for another 2 or 3 years. God forbid.
Who is sitting here? Who is sitting here? Representatives of schools who should be here listening.
Okay.
They were allowed to go home. I have to go to work tomorrow.
Angel, it's okay. All right, I'd like to read something real quick. As you know, there's a petition.org going around. We're trying to get 1,000 signatures. What are we up to? Anybody check? 389 signatures, Elmont residents. Jaime and Battle Briquette have failed in their roles as board members to the Elmont and Sewanaka school bodies. Their failures have adversely impacted students, district staff, and the family members of the affected students and have left a stain on our community. I don't know who wrote this. It wasn't me. Jaime and Battle Briquette failed to ensure the central office functions in a beneficial way to the entire district body. Jaime and Battle Briquette have failed to maintain the orderly conduct of the district by ensuring there is a leadership at the school level. Jaime and Battle Briquette have failed, most importantly, to prioritize the education, health, and general welfare of the students of Elmont Memorial by leaving them without a highly respected educator as principal on the day of the school year. Sorry, I should have left that out. But you see where I'm going with this. As such, the community has lost all confidence in their ability to effectively represent Elmont as we question their motives, focus, and their ability to lead. Tell me when I'm wrong. For the betterment of all residents of Elmont and Sewanaka communities, especially the children, we demand Jaime and Battle Briquette resign as board members of the Elmont School District Board of Education, effective immediately. One more paragraph. Sorry to have you out so late, General. In the event they do not resign, then we call on the Elmont Union Free School District Board of Education to recall them from their roles on the Sewanaka High School District Board of Education. And that is the reoccurring theme. And I'm putting that on you, Garlic, Tiffany. What was your name again? Michael. What was your name, young lady? I'm sorry. Don't take this personally, but you're complicit because you put them up there. And we're going to be back next month. We're going to be here. We're going to be at the high school on the 25th. And we're going to be here again after that. And I'm going to keep growing our numbers because you sat there and told me they don't vote because they don't care. Do you remember saying that to me, Jaime? They don't vote because they don't care. You said that to me. You can sit there and shake your head. Is that executive session material? No. He told me they don't vote because they don't care. You know what? They care now because I'm lifting that veil and they know what's going on.
Mr. Meikle.
Sir?
Our conversations during your tenure on this board were very, very limited. I never said that to you.
Okay, for the record, you never said that. Okay, so I'm lying. Okay? How many of your fellow board members have you sat down and mentored? Maybe Battle. Huh? How many of them have you mentored?
Not true.
If you hit the lottery tomorrow and you're gone, I'm going to keep it positive. I could have said got hit by a bus, but I'm not that person. If you hit the lottery tomorrow, who's going to take the mantle? Who are you grooming? If you get voted out, who's going to handle those matters?
So each board member has a responsibility to develop themselves through the training that's availed to all of us. All of us are availed training. And when I got on the board, there was no one. There was no mentoring. It was learn as you go. Mm-hmm. And you know that.
Well, that's why this whole thing's falling apart, because I know for a fact you haven't sat with our two board members. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say I know for a fact. I'm pretty sure you haven't sat with your new two board members and groomed them and mentored them and grow them.
Not true.
Right?
Not true. We've had conversations.
Yeah.
And talking about what the roles and responsibilities are.
Because if they knew who you really were, you wouldn't be president. That's my point.
Well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Two of you need to go. That's the common thread. Like I said, we'll be back here. We'll see you on the 25th at the high school. We got more questions for you. We're not done. Okay? Oh, by the way, Sheldon Meikle, Miriam Court. Thank you.
So, good evening. This is Rochelle Lewis again. I just have I'm probably the final one, but I just want to get a clarification on the process. Because my understanding is that there will be two seats open at the end of this school year. Is that correct?
Correct.
And do you know whose seats those will be?
The district clerk has that information and will be communicating it out in February. But I think Ms. Capers just raised her hand and said that her seat and Mr. Mafia's seat will be up in the 2023 school cycle.
One of the things that I have constantly sort of tried to figure out is that if there are people who go through the process and hand in their numbers and get onto the slate, how is it determined who runs against which seat? So, for example, if there is one person that only rises up against which seat, would that go against?
So that
Papers or
that individual, when they come into the district clerk's office, would request the name of the seat that they wish to rise
and against. Is it given at the time of request?
Yes.
Okay, so
and after the February meeting of next year, February 2023, the petitions will be made available.
Okay. And then after that, if there's two candidates that come and they want to go against, let's say, Ms. Capers, they would both say Ms. Capers, and at that time, Mafia would have nobody that's running against him. It would be two against Capers and one against Mafia.
According to your scenario, the way you just explained it, that's correct.
No, I'm just saying, as long as I run.
Right.
And I say I'm running against Tiffany.
Right.
And let's say Sheldon runs, and he says he's running against Tiffany. Tiffany now has two opponents, and Mafia has none.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, excuse me.
The only thing wrong with that scenario is you're assuming that I'm running. So I also have to submit a petition just like you would.
Right.
And I also have to rerun for my seat. So it's not necessarily that I have two opponents. It's three people running for the seat formerly held by Tiffany Capers.
Okay. So, and if you choose not to run, we were still running for your seat.
It's right.
And we would not be moved down. So as if the community comes up with three opponents for Mafia, then those three are running against Mafia, whether Tiffany runs or not?
Correct. Okay. Her seat is separate from Mr. Mafia's.
And then would there be a special election if she chooses not to run? Because now her seat is open.
No, if she chooses not to run, then whoever takes a petition out against her seat?
No, I'm saying in the scenario where there's no one that listed Tiffany's seat.
Oh, we've never had that before.
Okay, but if that is the case.
If that is the case, have you ever experienced anything like that?
I'm just trying to understand all scenarios.
Okay.
So let's say three people run against Mafia.
That's right.
No one listed Capers, mm-hmm. and at the time of determination, Capers says that she is no longer running.
Yeah.
Are all those three still going for Mafia, and there's a special election now for Tiffany's seat, or is the top two now going to be split? Because they did not select Capers' seat.
No, so in no event would the people running for Mr. Mafia's seat then be moved over to Ms. Capers' seat.
Okay, that so that's what so happen. Then it's clear. Whoever you assign or you choose to run against, that's the person. And if the other person did not run, there would be a special election if that was to happen.
Mike, use the mic. Diana, use the mic.
If you have two or three people running for one seat and no one running for the second seat, if this happens, like say at the last minute they decide they don't want to run and they pull out and that seat is now empty and there's no one that asks to run for that seat, what would happen is the board would appoint until the next election the following June.
They would appoint, they'll appoint what?
They would appoint someone to take that seat.
From the public.
Whoever they decide to choose. Usually, in the past, what I know that they have done is they've had people that had said they were interested, and the board interviewed them, and they chose someone from people that wanted to run.
Because I believe I was around at one time when something like that happened,
right.
And I was...
You were.
Yes, okay. Okay. I didn't run. I'm just saying.
No, okay.
Yes. All right. So that's the case. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So seeing no one else at the mic, I'd ask for a motion to adjourn. Oh, hold on a second. Our next regular meeting will be Tuesday, November 1st at the Covert Avenue School. Could I have a motion to adjourn? Moved by Garlic, second by Early Davis. Any discussion? All in favor? Motion carries. Thank you. Have a good night.